Blog Talk Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, no matter how hard you try. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. You're the renegade, it's atomic age. It's atomic age, we're renegade. You're renegade, it's atomic age. It's atomic age, you're renegade.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to TPU Radio. I am your host, Jason Easley. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. And on today's show, we're going to have a few odds and ends. We're going to talk about the Iraq War, the National Guard, Mitt Romney, Al Sharpton. Maybe we'll sneak a little Michael Moore in there, too. We're going to have just whatever feels like crossing our little minds today. So there's no real one dominant news story, so we're just going to cover a little bit of everything. And, of course, we're going to have our Huckabee Award winner. As of right now, please let me bring in first my good friend, Will. Hi, Will. Hi, Will. Will. I don't hear Will. Let's try George.
Hello,
George.
Jason.
Okay, George, we have you. Will, can you hear me? I don't think Will's there.
I haven't heard
Will
him
here.
Yet.
But Will isn't here. Let's try it again. Hello, Will. Huh. Well, hi, George. How are you?
Hi, Jason.
I have no idea where Will is. Will, if you can hear me right now, call back into the show because you're showing up, but apparently you can't hear a single thing I'm saying to you. This isn't good for Will.
Hmm.
It's going to be an interesting 2 o'clock news if Will can't hear anything. We're just going to have to hope Will can just talk into the phone and, like, everything comes out okay. But, so how are you doing, George? What's new this week?
I'm doing well, and, again, you know, like, happy Mother's Day to, you know.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day to your mom.
Yes.
Who must be very proud of her
little
boy.
I already made my call into her, and she is unfortunately unable to listen to the show right now, but I know that she'll be at least listening to the archive, and I can say happy Mother's Day to my grandmother, who is listening right now.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Well, happy Mother's
Day
to
your grandmother. She will be 61, and, well, you know, like, listener 61, and my grandfather will be listener 62, you know, like,
wow.
if our numbers hold up.
You know, if you keep inviting your family to listen to the show,
well, you know, like,
we might really have something here.
Every little bit helps, you know.
How big is your family? No.
You know, not enough to get us into the triple digits, but at least, you know.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
my mother's side of the family is huge, so if I would ever start recruiting all those people,
exactly.
I think we would be okay. We would easily be a top 300 show on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I'm sure of it, yeah.
Now, movie-wise, anything new in the world of movies we can talk about for a little bit?
Well, let's see. Interesting new in the world of movies. Well, I mean, it's... You know, obviously, you know, Spider-Man 3 is still, you know, very dominant in the movie business right now. As of last Friday, domestically, it already hit $199.8 million, and that was just on Friday.
Wow.
It's well over the $200 million limit there. But it still has not hit the point where it's reached a profit yet. Because
really?
the budget for the film, just production cost, was about $250 million.
And
then throwing in the advertising
cost.
And throwing
it's
in the advertising.
It's going to generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue.
Oh, yeah, like, obviously, like, I mean, internationally, it's definitely
internationally, DVD sales.
Yeah, I mean, internationally right now, you know, like, it's already raking it in. You know, it's right now the 87th highest grossing film in history.
And that's without Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Which is a traditional movie time.
Yep.
By that point in time, it'll have some competition. I mean, the Shrek movie will be out. A few other things will be out.
The Shrek movie will be out. The Pirates of the Caribbean will be out.
That's coming out Memorial Day weekend.
This is the summer of threes. This is what we, you know, like is going on right now. We have a third Spider-Man.
Okay. Will's called back in. Let's see if we can hear Will now.
Hello.
Will.
Yes.
Hey. Right. Could you hear me the last time?
Yes.
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
Nothing was coming in over the show.
No, I don't
so
know.
I don't know what you were saying. You could have been saying horrible things about us.
No, not at all.
Oh, no, not at all.
I was saying hello.
Yeah, we're all going, hello.
I was waving my arms, too, but I knew that didn't work, so.
Waving your arms. I didn't quite see it through the monitor, Will. You should have stood up a little more. Maybe I could have looked outside and see you down the street.
Yeah, really.
But George wished his mom a happy Mother's Day and his grandma. Would you like to wish your mom a happy Mother's Day?
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Even though she chose to leave town on Mother's Day?
That's all right.
Your mom's out visiting other family, right?
Mm-hmm.
So will your parents actually catch the archives if you say happy Mother's Day? Your mom will...
Well, I already gave her her card, so.
So you're covered. So you said you gave her your card. That's it. She's done.
Yeah.
Happy Mother's Day. Here's your card.
Okay, I'll roll out the red carpet when she comes back. You know.
Yeah, roll out the red carpet. Be like, Mom, you're the greatest. Yeah, it's like,
what?
Well, I know my mom. She's eating DSL on Tuesday. She hasn't listened to the show yet because she's on dial up, but. Unfortunately, I think she'll probably start listening to the show once she has DSL, and that's going to be very interesting. I mean, if my mom starts calling into the show, every show has to have their one prank caller,
mm-hmm.
And I think my mom will be that. My mom makes me look like Ronald Reagan. My mom is a very liberal woman, but so okay, guys, let's talk about the world of politics.
All right.
Anything interesting besides the Fort Dix Six, Will, catch your ear? Everybody, anything really jump out of anybody news-wise this week? Gentlemen?
Reverend Al Sharpton.
Oh, but Al Sharpton's your news report, right?
Right.
We're going to deal with Al Sharpton in the second half hour.
Right.
George, anything really special jump out at you?
Nothing really. It seemed like everybody was kind of in that, take a break and go to the concession stand,
the holiday weekend after the debates
and everything.
With the holiday weekend coming up, things are really slowing down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't a whole lot going on. I mean, you have Mitt Romney going on 60 Minutes tonight, telling the world that polygamy's bad. And basically giving out some of his strongest criticism about the Iraq War. But compared to what the Democrats say, this still isn't really what we would consider big-time criticism. Like, he basically says the war was bungled, mismanaged, terribly run, poorly done. He doesn't commit to getting us out of Iraq, though. And I'm not so sure how well, you know. I just don't think it makes a difference. Like, Republicans are all making this finite distinction between mismanaging the war and getting us out of the war. And if you aren't willing by this point in time to say, look, we got to get out of there at some point, it doesn't matter to the American people. They're tuning you out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because Giuliani's still running around trying to be Mr. Conservative this week. Obama went after the private Medicare providers and basically said these private contracts are a waste of money and we could save $150 billion a year. Now, you know, when I'm reduced to talking about Barack Obama and Medicare, it's a slow week.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
And John Edwards was probably the big newsmaker of the weekend, at least, with his plan to support the troops and the war. Which, and he
which,
says that everybody
sounded
should act
like,
patriotically.
Sounded like it was
do
a very good
not.
Way of kind of using the Republican soundbite, you know, system and everything like against them.
Oh, it's a great, it's very, very, very creative. I mean, what he's doing, and I wrote this on our blog yesterday, what he's doing essentially is turning the Republican rhetoric on its ear.
Yeah.
He's
mm-hmm.
saying, be as patriotic as you can and support the troops, but a big part of supporting the troops is bringing them home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
we want to
see the troops reunited with their families. That has
right.
nothing to
and
do
I,
with
I think
patriotic.
I'm going to ask you guys, each of you guys this. I honestly think, I wrote this yesterday, I honestly believe that he just showed the Democratic contenders the inoculation towards the un-American, unpatriotic, if you don't support the war rhetoric that the Republicans have been spewing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think he just showed them the way to get around that.
Yeah, and
I mean,
it's surprising that nobody thought of it earlier.
I mean, he launched another website, Support the Troops, End the War. Is the website name. So if you Google that, or if you go in and type www.supportthetroopsendthewar.com, it'll take you to the new Edwards site. Yeah, it really is surprising. I think other Democrats have tried to make that case, but they didn't do it as effectively.
Yeah.
They weren't able to kind of put it all together, you know, because they would go, well, we're patriotic, we support the troops, but we got to end this war.
Yeah, it sounds like they need a marketing strategy. You know, like
yeah, I mean,
they
yeah.
need a, like
I
a,
mean, they
like
really
a real
do. They need to figure out, and all it is framing. The Republicans have defined patriotism as supporting the troops in the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the Democrats need to redefine patriotism, and I think this is the best time to do it whenever 70% of Americans are against the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the time when they want another definition of patriotism, because Americans are still, any poll you look at, Americans overwhelmingly support the troops.
Right.
But they don't support the war
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like people out there are just looking for somebody to say, look, it's fine to be patriotic and support the troops, but it's also okay to hate this war.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why. Like, John Kerry stumbled so much over this war, and popular opinion hadn't really shifted yet in the 2004 election, but it was starting to. But he couldn't make that connection. I don't see how or why that just eluded him. He was too busy trying to look commander in chiefish.
Right, trying
you know?
To basically kind of, you know, he kind of got there. He kind of got there with his whole, when he was making a speech at the Democratic Convention, when he was saying America can do better and help is on the way. You know, like he kind of got the point that there is a catchphrase that's needed to really kind of capture his audience. The problem was that he just picked the wrong one.
Yeah, you think he picked the wrong phrase?
Yeah, I think that, you know, like, I mean, I like the fact that, I always liked the fact that he always felt that America can do better. You know, like, that was something that I thought was, like, a really good choice of words, because he wasn't saying America needs to do better or something like that. It was not like, it wasn't playing up like any sort of desperation. It was basically saying that we have the capability to do better than what we are doing right now, and that's something that, you know, that the Democratic Party has been using for so many years, because that's basically like what they promote. They promote moving forward. They promote change.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, George, you and I have talked about John Kerry for the last two shows, a little bit here and there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't ask Will. Will,
yes.
What did you think of John Kerry as a candidate in, like, 2004, and the Democratic Party as a whole?
Well, they were very weak.
Weak? Really? You thought Kerry was weak?
Well,
or are you looking back on it now?
I'm looking back on it now that he was not a very strong candidate. He did, you know, the one thing that strikes me the most is what we were talking about the other night about his little hunting picture. You know, the poster
of him. That's actually on my wall here in the living room.
Yeah.
John Kerry in camo and an orange vest carrying a shotgun hunting. Because I find it ridiculous.
Yeah.
A blue blood like John Kerry is not going to be out hunting a deer.
Right.
And it's preposterous for John Kerry to pretend that he's out hunting a deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now, we believe if Dick Cheney's out killing things. we have no problem believing that Dick Cheney probably uses inhumane traps around the house just to kill pests and rodents, because he probably enjoys watching things in pain. He seems like a sadistic, evil man. Oh, and one more point, since we're talking about O4 a little bit, Will and I were watching a documentary last night at Frontline from a couple weeks ago about the politics of global warming. And what Will pointed out, which was really funny, is when you listen to George W. Bush speak as a candidate, he doesn't sound retarded.
Go ahead.
No, Will, you know what's coming, but you know.
Yeah.
Will brought
yeah.
up, he actually made sense as a candidate.
He did.
What happened?
I don't know.
Our obvious assumption was, as we were sitting here watching this drinking rum, our obvious assumption was that he was drinking again. As soon as he won the presidency shortly after 9/11, he started drinking. We don't know what happened to him. He got stupider. He won the White House and became a moron.
Because in that speech, when he was campaigning, he sounded very astute, intelligent, and he sounded like he knew what he was talking about.
And then all of a sudden, he wins the presidency, and he becomes a babbling fool. Like, how does that happen? Is it the Peter principle? Is it the point where he actually got promoted to the point of incompetence?
I have a feeling that that's basically like, I mean, he was very good at selling himself in order to say that he's the right man for the job. But he's sort of that person that as soon as he gets the job, he has no idea what the hell to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like a situation where somebody can talk a great game and everything, but they can't back it up. And that's something that he apparently has been able to do for a while.
Can talk the talk, but can't walk the walk.
Right.
And that I get that same impression about Hillary Clinton today. In 08. I really think that she is packaged well,
mm-hmm.
and she tries to say the right things, but we have no idea what we're going to get if she would win.
Right.
That is true.
I just, that's one of the big things that really holds me back on Hillary. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know if she's serious about getting out of Iraq. I don't know if she's serious about anything she says except health care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because she's always nuancing and changing her mind. Which isn't just a female thing, by the way. I don't want to mean to make that sound like a sexist comment. But, John Kerry was a flip-flopper, and he's a little girl, too.
Yeah.
By the way, anyone who wants to join in the conversation can.
Oh, here we go. No, we'll go.
By dialing 718-664-6734 or instant messaging us at CAPJ71.
On AIM.
Yes, on, yes.
Will, you've been looking forward to bringing that for over a week and a half now.
I missed that last week. I was like going
to
withdraw.
That. You were doing your grave dedication, and you just wanted to tell people to dial in
718-664-6734.
And there is
you
know,
later.
I'm like, what's wrong with him?
He needs to stop drinking before he comes to these things. And then they started singing 867-5309 in the background. And you're like, No.
718-664-6734.
It doesn't make a
sense. Wow, we have a jingle now. Wow, man, if we can just get Christina Aguilera to sing it, we'll have it made in the shade. But, you know, because she's a Pittsburgh girl, we might be able to convince her.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we can just, like, ask her questions and end in the digits of our phone number. You know? What's the number that comes after 6 but before 8? We might have to be a little cagey to pull that one off. Now, we're going to basically go after Al Sharpton in the second half hour, but let's talk about Michael Moore for a little while. Okay, guys. Now, Will wasn't aware of this story until I pointed it out. George, you might be aware of it, that Michael Moore thinks the Bush administration's after him.
This would be the probe that apparently has been opened?
He
was taking some, he was taking some, not some,
9/11
workers to Cuba for proper
healthcare.
Treatment. Because the treatment they were getting ever since 9/11 has been abysmal.
And you know, there's no problem with going to Cuba as long as you file the application with the Treasury Department.
Right.
And, I mean, everybody has to do it. You can't just take off to Cuba if you're a U.S. citizen.
Right.
And
right.
The problem is, Mike filed his application in October of 06. Now, here's where the politics get involved. The Treasury Department gets quite a few of these, but they're not exactly swamped. They are understaffed at Treasury, I will say that. But they had, more didn't go until March. They had 5 months to do his application, and they never touched it. Now, that's where the politics come in. Somebody at Treasury saw Michael Morris going to Cuba, and they thought, we're not going to deal with this. We're just going to let this sit and die in a corner somewhere, and they won't go to Cuba then.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Moore probably desperately wanted the footage for this movie. You know, this is a big part of his film.
Yes.
So he went to Cuba anyway with the 10 ill Ground Zero workers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back, and the Treasury Department sends him a very, very nasty letter, or a very nice letter, depending on how you look at it, and says, we want to know all the details of your trip. We understand you went to Cuba. We want to know the details of your trip. Well, then Michael Moore goes ballistic and claims that the Bush administration is out to get him, and they're trying to repress his movie because the health care industry gave so much money to George W. Bush in both of his campaigns, which is very, 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 very true. This really rubs me the wrong way because I think Michael Moore knew if he went to Cuba anyway that this would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is exactly what would happen. And, I mean, George, you cover movies.
Yeah.
This just reeks of a publicity stunt.
It really does. And it definitely reeks of Moore kind of jumping the gun and claiming that the Bush administration is out to get him. Apparently, you know, like any time he releases something that's damning the Bush administration, all it seems to do is go.
Hello?
Because of the, sorry, I was cut off for a second, but, you know, like it seems like no matter what he does, it always seems to be administration because all you have then is you have them, you can have, like, all the Republicans saying the Hollywood left is out to get us, and all of a sudden that makes them the victims.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it obviously happened with Fahrenheit 9/11. That was a huge part of it.
Yeah. I think Michael Moore's trying to replicate some of that F9/11 success with this. But the problem is Fahrenheit 9/11 was the right movie at the right time.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a coincidence of perfect timing and the national mood.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure he'll ever catch lightning in a bottle that way again. And don't get me wrong, I like Michael Moore's movies. I own them all. I like them. But his movies should never be anyone's definitive political information on an issue.
Right.
Right.
They're made in a very subjective way.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't make any bones about this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
These are his opinions. But was the Bush administration really after him? I'll tell you what, I know a couple of people who have gone to Cuba, and they pretty much had to fill out, even with permission, they had to fill out the same sort of paperwork when they got back.
Right.
It's just part of the embargo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you guys think of the embargo against Cuba? Boy, you guys are really having trouble today. what do you guys think of the embargo against Cuba? Is it necessary? It's been there for 40-odd years now.
It's definitely, like, you know, like obviously, like, the last remnants, you can say, like, of the Cold War between capitalism and communism. It seems like it's something that, you know, I really don't really have any sort of, say, like, for or against it.
Would you like to go to Cuba?
Would I like to go to Cuba? It's never been on my list.
Just to visit. I mean, it was open as a tourist destination.
Yeah. I'd be interested in, you know, like, as a baseball fan, just, you know,
as a tourist, at one point in time, before Castro's revolution, Cuba was a huge tourist destination.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
casinos.
Yeah.
Cuba was a vacation hotspot.
Mm-hmm. Havana.
And I think Cuba is still today, from what I hear, Cuba is still a very beautiful island. And I would like to go to Cuba. Maybe not right away after Castro dies, because let's face it, as soon as Castro is dead, the embargo is probably going to be lifted. I think the embargo is only there to placate Cuban Americans, specifically those in Florida, who are still fighting the fight against Castro.
Right,
right.
There really is no actual purpose for this embargo anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's...
Communism's
that's,
dead, the Soviet Union's gone.
Yeah.
But politicians are afraid to lift it because they're afraid the Cuban Americans will go crazy if they lift it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to pitch a fit.
But as soon as Fidel's
Will,
gone,
would you like to... Now, Will, what do you think of the embargo?
You know, I really don't have any opinion on it because, you know, I really don't. I mean...
Well, you and George are just sharing a brain again.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't...
Really?
We have our moments.
It just, yeah, we have our moments. It just doesn't do anything to me, you know. It just
really.
I think it's so ingrained in our culture.
It's been there forever.
It's something that's basically been there since well before our time. You know, like, this is something that that is just been one of those things.
Like, what,
kind of have to. It's just one of those things that, you know, like, that the way the communism was, you know, like the way the Soviet Union was and everything. Like, I mean, I was born, you know, like in 76, so, you know, like, Castro had been in power at that point, you know, like, Castro had been in power for, hold on, let me do the math, about 17 years, like, around that time.
Wow.
Wow.
That was pretty sharp, George.
Yeah. Thank you, Godfather 2.
That's how you remember it?
It helped.
Oh, I think most of the people in this conversation had very few friends growing up. but yeah, I the embargo is kind of silly. And if Michael Moore wanted to go to Cuba as a protest of the embargo, and then he would come home, because, you know, George, are you a Yankee fan, George?
I am, yes.
Because I noticed he posted the Roger Clemens thing in the Sports Zone last Sunday.
That was basically a situation where I was watching it on YES. I was freaked out when I saw it. It obviously made for a very good theater. And when I looked on ESPN and MLB and everything, nobody else had it. So I decided,
you got us a scoop.
Let's go ahead and put this up. And sure enough, like, within an hour, it went up. And then a few hours later, it showed up on ESPN.
Yeah, it's well, see, the reason why I bring up the Yankees is, remember, they got fined $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
For taking players, basically for going to Cuba without permission to scout. You know, they got fined $100,000. And Michael Moore's looking at the same kind of fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue that his movie will make that over in spades.
Yeah.
His movie is going to earn that back with no problem because of the extra publicity he's getting.
And it's a safe bet that this is going to be tacked on at the end of the film.
Yeah, I think, well, the sole purpose he went there was to film it.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't go there as a political protester to go there to be a good guy.
Right.
He went
right.
there to film it.
Yeah.
So,
and not only that, but, you know, like, he had to have known that something like this was going to happen so that he could basically play himself up as the victim and go ahead and put it up there and say, like,
yeah, I mean, I like
the movie that the Bush administration tried to stop. You know, like, he can go ahead and, you know,
see, that's where this is flawed, because if the administration wanted to stop this movie, they wouldn't wait till 2 weeks before it's released to send a letter.
Right.
Right.
They would have squashed this thing months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It was years ago, because he was working on this. He's been working on this for the last couple of years. They would have squashed it a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, when Moore wants to claim that the government tried to box mask with Fahrenheit 9/11, he's correct there. Remember, they tried to get his distribution deal pulled?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they tried to withhold the movie then. This one, I think he's just trying to drum up a little bit of extra support.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really seem necessary, because people are going to go see this movie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The audience it's intended for is going to go see it.
Right.
I mean, it might not be a $100 million blockbuster, but it's going to do well at the theaters and with DVDs and everything else. See, when Michael Moore starts talking about the Bush administration out to get him, it reminds me of Hillary Clinton's vast right-wing conspiracy. And it makes me think that Mike Schiff is paranoid at the people on the right.
Right.
You know, and it really rubs me the wrong way. Because I think he should know better.
Yeah.
He should be smarter than that.
Oh, yeah.
But we have a few seconds, and then it will be time for the news.
Woohoo!
Will, do you want your music today?
Sure.
Oh, what the heck. We'll give you your music.
Cool.
Get ready to rock and roll, Will.
All right. Political Universe time is 2 p.m. now. Here is the news. Prime Minister Tony Blair announced this week that he will be retiring from his government position on June 27th. This opens the door for British Finance Minister Gordon Brown to campaign to be the successor of Tony Blair. At the beginning of his campaign, Brown announced that, quote, "I will strive to meet the people's aspirations. I want to lead a government humble enough to know its place, where I will always strive to be on people's side," end quote. In Iraq,
and we're going to get out of Iraq as fast as we can.
Exactly. In Iraq, 41% of the National Assembly have approved a petition that would set a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. Baha al-Araji, who is a supporter of Muqtada al-Sadr, said, quote, "The signatures have been submitted to the Speaker of Parliament, and after that, a committee chaired by me was formed," end quote. According to Kurdish MP Mahmoud Othman, a, quote, "majority of parliamentarians want this objective timetable agreed upon between Iraqis and Americans," end quote. In an open letter to United States military personnel, General Petraeus urged his troops to take the, quote, "moral high ground," end quote, when dealing with insurgents and the Iraqi people. In the letter, General Petraeus expressed concern by the results of a recently released survey that there was an apparent unwillingness on the part of some U.S. personnel to report illegal actions taken by fellow members of their units. The survey indicated that a small percentage of those respondents may have mistreated noncombatants. In the letter, General Petraeus commented that, quote, "some may argue that we would be more effective if we sanctioned torture or other expedient methods to obtain information from the enemy. They would be wrong. Beyond the basic fact that such actions are illegal, history shows they are frequently neither useful nor necessary," end quote. A new bill to fund the war in Iraq is already in the process of making its way through Congress. The House of Representatives passed the bill on May 10th, but it is already getting a disapproval rating from the White House. The bill, which only funds the war to the end of July, now heads to the Senate. According to Senator John Warner, said, quote, "I personally, speaking for myself, feel that we should have no bifurcation of the funding, that it shouldn't all be acted upon at one time," end quote. New York Representative Steve Israel said that, quote, "we want accountability for the first time, Mr. President, and all we're saying is this, report to the United States Congress, certify our progress, we'll have a choice," end quote. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi commented that Democrats will not give the president a blank check. The bill passed by a margin of 16 votes. On Thursday,
that bill's deader than Don Imus' radio career.
On Thursday,
That bill's deader than Don Imus' radio career.
On Thursday, the Reverend Al Sharpton apologized for a comment that questioned the faith of Mormons. Reverend Al Sharpton apologized to the Church of Latter-day Saints. Scott Trotter, who is the spokesperson for the church, considers the issue, quote, closed, end quote. Speaking to reporters, Republican presidential candidate Governor Mitt Romney said, quote, "it shows that bigotry still exists in some corners. I thought it was a most unfortunate comment to make," end quote. And you are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio. Now back to Jason Easley.
Well, what was the quote?
What?
What was the what did Al Sharpton say?
Oh, sorry.
Don't worry, I'll pull it up right here.
I thought I'd save it as a teaser.
We're gonna talk about Al here.
I thought I'd leave it as a teaser so that, you know.
Leave it as a teaser.
So that
yeah,
we keep people
yeah,
listening, so we'll mention it in the upcoming minutes.
We'll mention it, yeah. I mean, like, okay, Al Sharpton. Basically, here's what Al said while I pulled up the drip quote. Al was debating atheist Christopher Hutchins Monday in New York. And somehow he got way, 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 way off topic. And I say way, way, way because this really had nothing to do with the debate he was having. He sort of like launched into Mitt Romney during an unrelated question. And believe me, folks, I tried to find this audio. I think the vast left-wing conspiracy is hiding this audio. I can't find it anywhere. I looked all week. So I'm blaming the vast left-wing conspiracy led by, if you watch 30 Rock, the Black Crusaders.
Yeah, oh, geez.
It's Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby is hiding this audio somewhere. you know, I don't see. The thing is, you guys know how I feel about Sharpton.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever Al opened his big stupid mouth this week, again, I mean, Al Sharpton.
I'd be disappointed if he
all Democrats, all people of faith, all decent people a bad name. I don't know how else to really discuss it because Al doesn't seem to think before he talks, you know, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. I mean, why doesn't anybody ever bring up, wasn't he involved with the Tawana Brawley thing?
Oh, he was a main figure in the Tawana Brawley case.
Now, for those people who don't know, because that was a while ago, George, give them a little recap of what, because you're from New York, that was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, in fact, this actually happened close by to me, you know, like while I was, at the time when I was living there. But over in Wappingers Falls, New York, there was this 15-year-old young girl named Tawana Brawley who was, she was found on the streets, with a bunch of like racial, like you know sprawled on her. Her clothes were ripped and everything. She looked beaten up, and she claimed that it was a couple of white police officers who had done this to her. And everything, and all of a sudden, you know, like you had Al Sharpton, you had a couple other like figures, such as Sharpton, basically jumping on the case, and basically leading this whole crusade and everything, and people, were getting behind her and everything, and then next thing we knew, the case was dismissed because not only could they not find any evidence about the particular police officers that they had dragged through the mud and destroyed their reputations, but then it turns out that it was revealed that Tawana Brawley basically lied about the whole thing.
Made the whole thing up, essentially.
Made the whole thing up, destroyed, reputations, and she still stands by her case, despite that.
And
despite
Sharpton,
the fact that it's been proven that these men had nothing to do with her.
Yeah. And that was sort of the first really big chink in the armor of Al Sharpton, civil rights leader.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we got a clue that, facts don't always matter to Al Sharpton.
Right.
Yeah, and Al Sharpton is really is about Al Sharpton. Now, the direct quote from Al Sharpton on Monday was, he said, "As for the one Mormon running for office, those who really believe in God will defeat him anyways, so don't worry about that. That's a temporary situation," end quote. And then Al tried to say that he wasn't really saying that Mormons don't believe in God. Now, let's rewind the quote for a second here.
Yeah.
"As for the one Mormon running for office, those who really believe in God will defeat him anyway."
Oh, jeez.
That is insinuating.
Yeah.
Mormons don't believe in God.
Right, right.
And then he made things worse from Tuesday to Thursday by going on TV everywhere and blaming everybody except himself.
Apparently
and
he never watched
to apologize.
Oh, jeez.
His first explanation was, I have it right here. His first explanation
was misquoted. The dog ate his homework.
it was essentially first that he was misquoted. But he accused the Romney campaign of a blatant effort to fabricate a controversy to help their lagging campaign. "In no way did I attack Mormons or the Mormon Church when I responded that other believers, not atheists, would vote against Mr. Romney for purely political reasons."
No.
What in that quote says people are going to vote against Mitt Romney for purely political reasons.
Oh, that's...
And then he backed off of it on Wednesday, saying, what I said was, we would defeat him, meaning as a Republican. A Mormon, by definition, believes in God. They don't believe in God the way I do, but by definition, they believe in God.
By definition.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
No.
Yeah. What? What is he talking about? Al Sharpton is the very definition of whenever somebody gets themselves in trouble and they just start talking about everything and talking in circles, hoping that you'll forget the original point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just makes no sense. Let's go back to the original quote. As for the one Mormon running for office, I think we know who he's talking about because there's only one Mormon running for office.
Exactly.
Those who
exactly.
really believe in God, which apparently is everybody other than the atheists and Mormons.
Oh, jeez.
I do have to say one quick thing. It's really too bad that Al Sharpton's a Democrat because he would have, like, he'd have a golden throne waiting for him over at Fox News.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is exactly like what I wrote in our blog, and I think I put this on the Blogger News Network. This is from the Blogger News Network, too. I wrote it there. Al Sharpton, is he guilty of something besides being a moron? He's guilty of actually, in fact, saying what a lot of people are saying privately.
Mm-hmm.
That Romney will never win because he's a Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the funny thing is, you talk to people privately, and they all say Mitt Romney's doomed. He'll never win due to his faith. But when polls are taken, they all say, hey, I have no problem voting for a woman, an African-American, or a Mormon.
Right.
Which means that our society has become so politically correct on the surface, people now know how to lie to the pollsters.
Yeah,
yeah.
They tell the pollsters what they think is the right thing to say.
Right.
And, Will's done a few polls for his job at times. And, I mean, I don't think this has ever come up in anything he's ever done, but that's what happens. I mean, people won't vent their real feelings if they're the least bit controversial. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to go into the voting booth and, you know, press the button for the other candidate, or they're not going to, they've already haven't already decided, they're not going to vote. See, I think women have less of a barrier to the presidency than an African-American or a Mormon or somebody of a different religious faith. I think women actually, we're a lot closer to having a female president than we are anything else.
Especially considering that we had like a woman on the vice presidential ballot.
Yeah, women are now mayors, right. Governors, senators,
yeah.
Congresspeople. Women are all through local politics.
And
I mean,
we got a speaker in the House who's a woman. So.
Yeah, well, exactly. How could we forget that?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Will.
Sure.
Yeah, women have raised their profile and they've actually gotten some opportunity. I think if we did go one way, I hate to say it because. I'm hoping that Barack Obama can, if it's not John Edwards, Barack Obama can win the nomination, or Joe Biden. They can win the nomination and, you know, win the country. But I'm really afraid that there are a lot of people out there who, in the back of their mind, will not vote for an African-American candidate. It's frightening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you see
yeah.
little symptoms of this kind of thing in our country still all the time.
Well, this is very much like what we were saying, you know, like a few weeks back when we were asking, is America a racist country? And
yeah,
it is. You know, like that's something that we've, you know, like that's pretty much established. It doesn't want to be, but it
yeah.
is.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
it's, and that's
yeah.
and that's basically like what that ties into.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people are willing to give Barack Obama a shot,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
if there was a popular Republican out there, I don't know if Barack Obama could carry the day. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. If you have a popular, conservative, Christian, white Republican running on that side, and you have Barack Obama, I don't know how Barack Obama does.
Well,
you know what I mean?
We were 6 years away from actually, you know, like having one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, but the version that we have right now is very different from the one that's currently running.
John McCain.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're not gonna lay off poor John McCain for a minute, are you?
Oh, you know, like he's somebody who basically sold out his own values, and that's something that's despicable to me.
Yeah.
But do you guys think that Al Sharpton is now getting what he deserves after the Imus fiasco? Is this karma?
It's not even karma. It's just like this is a case of Al being Al. You know, like as a fan, hear that a lot. You know, like about
and
Manny
these kind
being
of things
Manny.
Are bound to happen when you're Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
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 Now,
but at the same time,
did you guys see his Fox News debate with Bernard McGurk from the Imus show? It was on Hannity and Combs, I think. And McGurk basically called Sharpton a race baiter. He did call Sharpton a race baiter.
Wow. Well,
I think Sharpton is a race baiter.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's good to see that somebody's actually calling him on it.
Yeah.
I think a long time ago, Sharpton and Jesse Jackson crossed the line from good, solid civil rights activism into race baiting and shameless self-promotion.
And it just polarizes
that's, I think, what kind of rubs me the wrong way about Michael Moore. I see what he's doing now as shameless self-promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
polarizes this country even more.
Right.
Yeah. I like his movies, but I don't see any difference between Michael Moore and Bill O'Reilly. One's on the left, one's on the right.
Right. It's very much like, I mean, these are the people that are basically saying over and over again how they want, they want racial equality and everything like that. And I mean, but nothing could be further from the truth, because if there's racial equality, these guys are out of a job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very profitable for them.
Yeah.
They
right.
have become very, very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Start, you know, getting involved in these kind of things. And you know what? We got to be fair. Sometimes Jackson and Sharpton do get involved in serious cases of racial stereotyping, racism, racial inequality.
But the problem that they don't realize is that the more that they delve into topics such as like the whole Imus fiasco and saying something like this, all they're doing is just making their noble causes look bad. Because all the people are looking at is that they can do as many good things as they do. You know, God bless them for doing those things, but at the same time, all people need to do is look at Al Sharpton. It's like, hey, wasn't that the Tawana Brawley guy? And credibility is dying right there.
Right.
They get remembered for the big things in front of the network cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, so people don't see all the good things they might be doing. They see Tawana Brawley.
Mm-hmm.
They see the Imus thing.
Yeah.
You know, they see Jesse Jackson turning up anywhere something's going on just to get his mug on camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they see.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they remember. So, in all fairness, I mean, these are gentlemen who in their past have done some good work. But what they've evolved into today is very different from what they used to be.
Right.
I mean, they're not what they used to be. And honestly,
right.
People like Al Sharpton, I find Al Sharpton embarrassing. As a Democrat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a better way to put it. I am embarrassed by a lot of his conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Some a lot. You know, probably a lot. You know, it's kind of like people who unabashedly support the Clintons, but they never really look at the Clintons' record.
Right.
You know, they never look at the fact that Bill Clinton signed the Republican welfare reform. Bill Clinton did NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill Clinton actually further the deregulation that Ronald Reagan started.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton was lax on the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, people don't... Bill Clinton didn't do a damn thing about global warming. Yeah, and they knew about it then.
Right.
Bill Clinton... See, the Clintons... People have the fond memories of their life at that moment, at that time. Times and things in the 90s were good. So
yeah.
People have a fuzzy feeling, a visceral fuzzy feeling about the Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just don't know if, when you talk about the Al Sharptons and the Hillary and Bill Clintons of the world, they are such polarizing, controversial people. I would actually like to see us get away from those kind of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and just get back to dealing with our problems as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got to do Huckabee Award winner, because I sort of forgot to overtly mention it last week. Okay, George, we'll see if you agree with this. Our first nominee was Sam Brownback
mm-hmm.
for giving the speech in front of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and using an analogy about families and football. It was a football analogy.
Oh, yeah, the Packers
game. Based on families.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll scroll back up here to my notes, and here it is. He said he was talking about football and families. This is fundamental, blocking and tackling. He said this is your line in football. If you don't have a line, how many passes can Peyton Manning complete? Greatest quarterback maybe in NFL history.
I think that's in Wisconsin.
In Brett Favre's backyard.
Well, say bye-bye to Wisconsin.
I do have to give him credit for one thing. Bob, you know, like he did not mention the Brooklyn Dodgers like Bob Dole did. So.
Yeah, he's also not 149 years old like Bob Dole was.
Right.
But, you see, that's just one of those stupid little mistakes that you don't make when you're stump speaking.
Right.
I mean, that would be like somebody coming to New York and saying that the Los Angeles Dodgers are baseball's greatest franchise.
Right.
Right.
Or, you know, like they could be saying that, you know, they could say, you know, basically all they need to say is something along the lines of, you know, like we have a great player, you know, like in our country in David Ortiz, like or Manny Ramirez.
Yeah,
and that would really
Way. Yeah, you could just mention the Red Sox and be like, and you know, we've had fine world champions that have come back like the Boston Red Sox.
Right.
So never say an underdog is down because, you know, who blew the 3-0 lead that allowed the Red Sox to go to the World Series?
yeah.
The Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, Roger Clemens won't save your franchise. just let you know, George, we've seen him pitch in the National League for the last couple of years. 5-inning pitcher now.
Wow.
I think he's going to get some middle relief. He basically, his starts average up to about 5 1/3 innings each. He's good while he's in there, but he doesn't have much gas left for long stretches.
Yeah.
So the Yankees better get some relief help if they're going to.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation that basically just kind of like, you know, it was a thrill to see him there and everything, but now all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we kind of have to win.
We had committed $24 million to him for half a season.
Nothing like a little extra pressure to, you know, to make the days go by.
I think though, before we get too deep into baseball talk, I mean, just from watching him in the NL for the last few years, he's still got it. I mean, but he doesn't have it for as long per start as he used to.
But it would also help, you know, like if he has the sort of run support that this particular lineup is capable of giving him. That's another.
I mean, it doesn't matter if Roger gives you a good start in your lineup, you're up by 3 runs, but your middle relief just kind of comes in and gives it back.
Well, you know, like, you know, in all fairness, the middle relief has been, you know, like in the past couple of weeks, it's definitely been picking it up a lot better than they were in April.
Oh, you're a diehard till the end. Now, our Huckabee Award winner,
I was born and raised
LeBron, got off on the football. Our Huckabee Award winner, as Will and I have sort of talked about last night, and I think you'll agree with this, George, it's the Fort Dick Six.
Mm.
The Huckabee Award winner is the Fort Dick Six.
Yeah.
Six morons who wanted to launch a terrorist attack by attacking a military base.
Dum, 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 dum.
Is the one institution in America you probably shouldn't try to attack.
Yeah, obviously.
Exactly.
I mean, it is. Not only is it a military base, it's a military base in Jersey. All right? They're not going to get very far in there.
And three of these people were pizza delivery guys.
Yeah.
They were going to go in under the disguise of delivering pizzas, launch their attack with rocket-propelled grenades and all kinds of armaments, and then run away.
Oh, jeez.
That is...
Oh,
my God. Just hearing about it, like, the first time was enough to just make me cringe and realize, like, you know, we have some really stupid people in this world.
And the Justice Department's all serious. Like, well, we can't find an Al-Qaeda connection. Al-Qaeda doesn't hire morons.
Right.
They don't have an Al-Qaeda connection because these guys make the people in Florida that were plotting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago look smart.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I think that the intent there is frightening, but when you look at the practical reality, these guys had no connections. They had no weapons. They had shoes, unlike the guys that were going to blow up in Chicago. The guys in Chicago, the guys in Florida that were going to do the thing in Chicago, met with who they thought was an Al-Qaeda operative and requested weapons and shoes. How dangerous can you possibly be if you have to carry out your attack barefoot?
Just throw some marbles down.
Least
and you're like, that'll
stop
them.
At least the pizza man had shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were as best I had in the game. They had proper footwear. This, ladies and gentlemen, is your Huckabee. They might go in the Huckabee Hall of Fame as some of the stupidest people ever to walk the earth. Now, when the U.S. is a huge country, when you're sitting there and you're looking at the U.S. on a map and you think, oh, I'm a terrorist. I want to do some really bad things and kill Americans.
Right.
Well,
whoa. Hold on, guys.
Your mind is,
we have
the military base.
Hold on. Hold on, guys. That's, we have a special guest here. We have my dog Liberty.
I hear.
Yes.
Hi, Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
she says hi, by the way.
Okay.
She might end up being a featured guest in the second half hour some week.
Yeah. Yeah. Like. and you thought it was just going to be the three of us.
Yeah. Well, this is a bigger show by the day. now we're commuting. Now we're trying to hit the Animal Planet demographic. Okay.
I told you I was
getting
my family involved.
Any element of this genuine stupidity that I've overlooked? Have I missed anything?
Oh,
what a bunch of jihadist pizza guys!
There is one little element of I would definitely say you know, like the Fort Dick Six definitely get the Huckabee of the Week award.
Yeah.
For honorable mention, I would say one thing that really just kind of rubbed me the wrong way is the mainstream media for trying to build a story where there wasn't one. You know, like, I mean, because God knows we've never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, for this
but
thing,
the,
this
particular story would focus on presidential candidate Mitt Romney's favorite book, which just happens to be Battlefield Earth. The funny thing, which I personally got a kick out of that just alone because all I thought was of John Travolta and his twirl makeup.
Oh my God, is Romney a Scientologist?
Well,
too?
That's the thing. It's just like he said it flat out. I do not agree with any facet of that religion, but I understand. You know, L. Ron Hubbard's Battlefield Earth is a very fun science fiction book. That's his quote. You know, like that's pretty much paraphrase there.
Well,
that's pretty much
it. I can see that.
And then
I can see that. But it wasn't called Scientology science fiction.
But as soon as they cut back to the newscaster, they automatically say, L. Ron Hubbard, the author, founder of the Church of Scientology and everything, basically just trying to push it that, like that Mitt Romney likes Scientologists. It was just like...
Oh...
It's just like he already said that he doesn't agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's honorable mention, but we could have one of those every week.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a weekly thing with the mainstream press now. Okay, we're under 2 minutes. George, what do you got to plug?
I have the second part of my trilogy of threes going up in on Scene Anatomy 101, and also which is also at 411mania.com/movies. And that'll be up on Wednesday, and then on Thursday will be my latest edition of the UBS Evening News.
Okay, Will, anything you want to add at the very end here?
Nope.
All right, Will, that's my boy. you guys know where to find me. You can find me at 411mania.com politics, the Blogger News Network, and anybody who has a MySpace page, please visit our MySpace, www.myspace.com/thepoliticaluniverse. Become our friend, become our loved one. We'll treat you well. It's time for this week's life lesson, and I got a little something special here for you guys, so listen in.
Don't forget that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me. Don't bogart that joint, my friend. Pass it over to me.
That's right, boys and girls. Caring, sharing is caring. That came from Easy Rider. I was actually just looking for a way to work in some Easy Rider this week. So don't bogart that joint, but the larger metaphor can be always share with the people around you.
And don't be a husky.
That's about it for the show this week. I am Jason. There's Will. And over yonder is George. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.